Okay, should we do it? You ready? Okay. So what I said to introduce this is that there are multiple meanings, right? But of course, the Kabbalist's main goal was to unify everything. So one of the lenses that's worth looking at this poem through is one in which we discover the multiple meanings, but then we unify them. That's the sort of general project here. That is to say, things can double up in meaning, but the meanings are ultimately the same. Because after all, everything is one. And that's the Kabbalist's goal, is to present a worldview in which everything has been unified, especially on Shabbat. Okay, so let's just start with the refrain itself. Who is talking to whom? Or identify the different pronouns in the refrain. Let's just put it out on the, before we identify, let's just identify the pronouns, then we can figure out who the pronouns are referring to. But just give me the actual, like.
Beloved.
Yeah, so give it, so we have the Don, right?
Kala.
We have the Kala.
And Ani, I guess.
Sorry? Shabbat, yeah, and? The speaker, right, or the, right, the speaker, exactly.
But then there might be extra people there.
Okay, extra people, yeah. Okay, right. So there may be a group of people who are the speakers, or, yeah. Okay.
Maybe
so,
Pene Shabbat is different from just Shabbat.
Pene Shabbat. Pene is significant. Okay, possible. I don't want to deny. Again, not an expert here. I think, okay, so let's just play out. So let's give me one version of this. Who might be speaking? To whom? To do what? Okay, so what you want to do is connect the Kala with Shabbat, and then it would be the Dod plus
the speaker
are going out to meet.
So it's parallel. It's like, come, my beloved, and greet the bride. So you and I greet the bride. Let us, you and I, greet Shabbat the bride.
Okay, great. So that's one possibility. And actually, if you flip over the page, since we're in Bava Kamma, why don't you read the second source on the page? Did you get this far? You're already on Lamed Bet?
No.
Okay. All right, great. A little chazara here. So,
take it.
Go ahead. Remind yourself.
Rabbi Pinin would say, come, let's go out to greet the Queen Bride.
Yeah, we just read it in the Hebrew. Likrat Kala Malkata. Right? So here you have Kala here is being equated with the queen. Right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay,
now we have another version of that, right, which adds the word Shabbat. Okay, so your equating of Shabbat and Kala is borne out by this Gemara here. And just while we're at it, let's just read it. Okay, right? So Rabbi Yanai would wrap himself v'kai and omeid and say, bo'i kala, bo'i kala. Again, we have this doubling that shows up at the end, obviously, of our poem. And you have a slightly different version that comes from Shabbat in the text before. Okay, so one possibility is that the speaker speaks to the dod, and says, let's go out and greet the bride who is Shabbat. So now let's try to assign certain possibilities here. Who might the speaker be, and who might he be speaking to? Yeah.
God,
ah, okay, great. So one possibility is to take it out of the bodily for a second here, out of Rabbi Yannai and Rabbi Hanina. You're talking about, God is speaking to Israel.
Or in the other direction.
Okay, and they're going to greet the bride, but whose bride is it? Okay, so, right, so right. In other words, everybody, every day has a pair, and Israel, and Shabbat is left alone. No, Shabbat, your pair is Israel. Okay, so that's one possibility, right? God is speaking to Knesset Yisrael, let's say, collective of Israel, and let's go out and meet Shabbat. What's another possibility? You're going to do it more based on the Talmud here. Yeah, right? In other words, Dod here is my friend. That is to say, I, Tzaddik number one, I'm speaking to Tzaddik number two. Let's go out and greet the bride. Now, who the bride could be Shabbat, as was suggested by Leah, or it could be the actual bride, meaning your wife, right? And then the question is, well, what is Shabbat doing there? And this is where I want to sort of play out the multiple meanings here as it sort of works out with the Kabbalah theurgy, right? Where you have, let's say that we have the Dod, who is the Tzaddik, okay? So what the Tzaddik does is goes out and meets his Kala, that is to say, his wife, right, Isha. And as a result of this union, right, what happens? They elevate to Shekhinah. Right? In other words, they unify in order to have Shekhinah as a presence. Right? They bring the presence of Shekhinah in. Now, we've talked about, so that's one unification. You mentioned another one, right, of, you know, God and Knesset Yisrael and Shabbat, some unification there of characters. And then there's, of course, the Kabbalistic one. Let's say the Sefirot. So we can play that out for one second. Actually, if you look on the last page, you have the Sefira tree. This comes from the Danny Matt's translation of the Zohar. But let's just play out how that would work. So in the Dod, who is a male, you have, Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, Tiferet, right? Who is going to meet his Kala. So what is Tiferet's bride? You can see it on the map here. Sort of Al Yudei Yesod, through Yesod, which we'll deal with in a minute. You have Malchut, right, which is the female presence. So you have that move, and when Tiferet and Malchut unite, they go up to the upper level, the top, right? We'll talk about the sphere in a second, but they go up to Bina. Right? Bina is sort of the upper level female sphera. If Malchut is the lower level one, Bina is the upper level one. Typically, when you're looking at the Sefirot, the top three are in their own category. So Keter, Chochma, and Bina are in their own category. Yeah, you can. And the bottom six are separate from that, with Malchut being its own sort of like sub, you know, universe here. So the whole idea is for everything to be elevated up. So if Tiferet is in the middle of the bottom ones, unites with Malchut, they can reach the upper one of Bina. So what you have Kabbalistically is all these things happening at once. Right? In other words, the Tzaddik, the Kabbalist, would go out and actually unify with his wife, have conjugal relations with his wife, in order to elevate up to the level of Shekhinah. And that would affect, on the upper realm, the Tiferet unifying with Malchut to elevate up to Bina. Right? So you have this sort of double elevation unification that's going on here. You had a thought, Cody?
No, I just wanted to say that we can also read it as our faces will look like as the Shabbat faces. Like not the faces of Shabbat, it is our faces that will become. Like,
so you're translating the Kabbalah as not as we will greet, but what?
The second part of the sentence, not as this is the face of Shabbat that we are greeting.
Right.
This is our face that are going to become different.
Uh-huh. Okay, so more of a reflexive reference to how we will be altered through the actions in the first part of the verse. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, how we will change in a way.
Uh-huh. Okay, nice. I think, yeah.
I have a question about the...
Yeah.
Can you just describe a little bit more about this whole Mahud, Tiferet, Bina process?
Right, so again, you can go to David Ingberg's class if you want, like, sort of the fuller explanation, right? But these are the various aspects of, you know, of God as filtered through, you know, this 10-sphera ladder, where something like Keter is, you know, which is often also called Ein Sof, which is, like, way off in unreachable, you know, land. We'll talk about how that plays into our poem in a second. Chochma and Bina as being these upper realms, you know, the right-hand side and the left-hand side also being the Chesed Gevura side, the, you know, more, whatever, Rachamim, you know, the sort of gentler side versus the Din side. And you can run that, and you can run that all the way through sort of going down the tree. But fundamentally the goal of the Kabbalist is to start to unite these various Sefirot to lift them all up. And so Malchut, which is the most imminent part of that tree, that is to say the Shechina, that is the presence, right? You know, like Shechein, a neighbor, right? It's something that has presence with us, also known as Malchut. That is the sort of most available part of the Sefira. And when we can, you know, raise up to that level, the sort of parallel raising happens up in the Sefirot above that. Correct. Right. I mean, Yesod, it seems to be more of like a... although it can also unify, it can also be sort of a means of unifying, right? If Tiferet and Malchut might connect through Yesod. Yesod is often identified with the phallus, so you have some operation of connection from Tiferet to Malchut, al yedei Yesod, which we might get to in some of these verses here. You want to add something, Josh?
What might be helpful is that Tzaddik is often a word for Yesod. Like Tzaddik is the one who unites the earthly realm and the heavenly realm.
Great. Yeah, exactly. And you see a righteous one in the list of synonyms for all these. That would be the function of the tzaddik here.
That's also, on the Dodi, thinking about like the groups of people that were there in the Galilee, these cohorts turning to each other, facing each other, and going out together, and calling each other even beloved. I think that kind of really palpable, erotic bond between these two people, you know, in this group together is going out. It's interesting the way that kind of is
Yeah, actually, if you don't mind reading it, just since you mentioned it, why don't you just flip over to page 3 and you can see this is sort of like a report from the field in text number 5, Kama Kitot.
Kama Kitot Yotzim Erev Shabbat, Migod Yom, Al Gushim Levanim, Mekablim Pnei Shabbat, Purim Mizmor, Abul Hashem Bnei Imlim, Upizmon, Lechadodi, Mizmor Shir Lema Shabbat.
Right. So, sort of what you describe, I think, is that reality, right? This is sort of what we imagine the Kabbalists were doing, dressing up in white, going out, reciting these poems. You see here that the 6 Psalms are not part of this liturgy, right, in this Kabbalistic liturgy. And in fact, L'chadodi is separate from Bo'i Kala, right? There is some sort of own separate existence of what it would mean to be saying Bo'i Kala, which hopefully we'll get to at the end. But that's, I think, what you're describing, Josh, is the one in which people turn to each other, may even have sort of like an erotic or loving relationship where I could call my fellow tzaddik the Dod, and we will go out together to greet the Kala, as opposed to the Dod and the Kala being the only lovers in the picture. Yeah.
But I think there's also a question like why it's written Lecha and not Nelecha.
Uh-huh.
Like you try to describe like a really, I don't know, everybody together, but he wrote Lecha, to be, and not Nelcha, like as together.
Right, right. Which, and the togetherness may be reinforced with the nikkabalah at the end as opposed to like tikkabalah. Right? If I was just giving you commands, I would have had that go run through, but perhaps by the end of the line.
I just wanted to say it's not so clear.
Not so clear, right. That I think we can all agree on. One other way of looking at this line is one in which you actually take it out of the literal meaning of the words and just look at it in terms of the pure components of the words. For instance, how many words are there in the line? Seven, right? Which is obviously related to Shabbat. But then if you start to break it down by letters, so how many letters are there in the line? Yeah, so you have 26, right? 26 letters. And again, this is a classic Kabbalistic move where the words in some ways are transcended by the letters, right? The letters are what's important, the combination of the letters and the sort of meditation on the letters, where yes, the words have their own meaning and you can sort of, you know, assign meanings to them, but also there's just the function of the letters. And if you notice the breakdown of the letters, so there's 26 letters, but if you divide it down in terms of the halfway point or the division of the line, you have 15 letters in the Charodi Likrat Kala and 11 letters in Pnei Shabbat Nekabalah, which if you do the gematria on it, 15 being Yud He and 11 being Vav He. Right? So you have Yud He uniting with Vav He. And again, if you look through the poem, all the unifications are sort of running through the poem itself. Now there are 9 verses to the poem. Which begs the question, why 9? What would you expect?
10.
So where's the 10th? The chorus, right? And the way that the chorus functions is in some ways interweaving between all the lines, which is apparently one of the ways that Keter would function, right? The Keter, the uppermost realm, would weave its way through, has some emanation that touches all the other sfirot. And that's, in fact, the sort of, you know, physical layout of the poem, where this tenth sphira, as it were, sort of melds through or winds through all the other spherot. So there's a level of analysis here that you could do that doesn't even look at the meaning of the words at all, and it's just simply like sort of counting letters and numbers, which, again, the Kabbalists were very into. Okay, so let's move down and do a couple of the verses. Alan, you had something? Or no?
No, it's
about. Yes, right, wild. Okay, so Shamor v'zachor, we were talking about this in this group over here. So now again, almost all the phrases from the Chadodi come directly from the Bible. The direct quotes from the Bible. Kilman makes the argument, I think this is absolutely correct, that unlike most prayer, you can't simply read it as a juxtaposition with a biblical text. That is to say, there is a biblical text, but you have to understand how the Kabbalists were reading those texts. Otherwise, it just doesn't make any sense. It's sort of quoting random psukim from Isaiah and, you know, Jeremiah and the Psalms. And it's important to notice, I think, the differences in the ordering here to the extent that there are some. So again, Shana and Rachie were talking about this. Shana had her trivia question, so why don't you just pose it to the group?
Why does it say Shamor v'zachor and not Zachor v'shamor?
And you just flip over to page 3. I mean, we saw this with Rav Eitan on Shabbat, but the text that they're referring to, or that you should have said Zachor v'Shamor, how do you know? Because read the text, the last text on the page.
Zachor v'Shamor
v'Dibor Echad Ne'emru. Right, Zachor v'Shamor v'Dibor Echad Ne'emru, as opposed to Shamor v'Zachor. So one theory is, Shana has it. So why is it Shamor v'Zachor instead of Zachor v'Shamor?
Because it's the acrostic of Shlomo HaLevi.
Right. That's Zlomo Halevi, right? So you needed to have it for the acrostic. And again, if we're probably not going to have time to look at the other poem, but to the extent that you were looking at another poem, you can see how someone who's trying to jam their name into it might have to do some fancy footwork to get that to work. Although, you give the guy enough credit that maybe he could have come up with some line that he wouldn't have had to, like, do violence to the order that would, you know, come up with another shin verse here. But if you look at it another way, one of the ways that you could see this through another light, we were talking about the idea that Zachor, from a Kabbalistic understanding, is what's the root of Zachor? What are the letters that make up the root of Zachor? Zachar, right? The male, right? So if you have Shamor as the feminine, as the first thing, we say V'yanuchu va at night. V'yanuchu va Yisrael. And in the morning we say V'yanuchu vo, right? So we go from feminine to masculine in the sort of flow of Shabbat. And in Mincha we say V'yaruch Uvam, feminine, masculine, united, right? So here you have a similar move where Shamor is the feminine, because basically Zachor is the masculine, right? And when you're talking about feminine and masculine, so now what are we talking about? So Shamor, feminine, equals Malchut, right? Malchut, which is the feminine, the Shechina, the lower level of the Sphira. Vizachor is what's going to unite with the feminine, Kabbalistically, what's going to unite with Malchut? So it's already Tiferet, right? So Tiferet, so Shamor being Malchut, Tiferet being Zachor, B'dibor Echad. Now it's not even the Gemara version of Dibor Echad, that is to say what we learned on Shabbat, you know, contradictory halachot that are said at the same time, or aspects that are said at the same time, but instead, no, literally, they're made into one unit, into one davar, into one entity, right? That's what we're trying to do here. We're uniting male and female. It's constantly moving our way through, especially in this verse. Yishmianu El HaMiyuchad, the united God, which is what we're trying to do. And then again, you have, you know, Hashem Echad. So now we have Yud-Heh Vav-Heh Echad. Now, Yud-Heh Vav-Heh itself was also mapped onto the Sfirot, where you have to sort of a little bit back into this, but let's say Hey at the beginning. A word that ends in Hey is what kind of word? Feminine. So the Hey is going to represent Malchut, the last Hey. Okay? So the last Hey is Malchut. Now, what's the Vav? You're doing a little bit of Gematria. Six. So the middle six Sfirot. Okay? So Malchut, which represents the lowest Sfira, is the bottom Hey. Vav is the middle Sfirot, right? Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod. Those six are the Vav. And then you're left with Yud, Hey. So how do you make it work out? Well, one way of counting it is that Bina is Hey, because Bina and Malchut are mirror images of each other. Remember, Malchut, when Tiferet and Malchut unify, the masculine and the feminine unify, you get up to the upper feminine, the Ima Ila, you know, Shabbat HaGadol is also known as, right? Malchut is Shabbat, this is Shabbat HaGadol. So you want the Hey and the Hey to be parallel to each other. So what does that leave you with? Yud, but you got Yud for Chochma and Keter. So this is nice, because Chochma is the Yud, and Keter is the little crown on the Yud, right? The little hard to even see part of it, right? The upper part, that little nook, you know, the little like, whatever, the very, very top of the calligraphed Yud, okay? So all of that, Hashem Echad, when I say Hashem Echad, I mean the Sfirot unify, right? Yud Heh Vav Heh turn into Echad. That's what this verse is doing, yeah?
Out another theory, maybe, for Shane's question, which is the root shame in this, like, shin mem, comes up at the beginning of most lines in this. So just like, I think there's a poetic aspect or a literary aspect.
Where you say like sham.
Because you have shamor at the beginning of this line. The next one you have hishmi anu, which also has that sound.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
You Shema. Can't really say Shemo Echad before you say Hashem Echad,
right,
so that
enough.
Would be why that line would fall out of that pattern. But then you have L'shem is the beginning of the next
nice.
Line. So you have that, like, and you feel it when you say it. Also.
That's nice, actually, right. So
and that's true not only for this verse, it's true for other patterns.
Uh-huh,
other
very interesting. That's nice. It's sort of the literary, the alliteration. I mean, it would be interesting what Shin Mem would signify from a Kabbalistic side.
Or maybe it's poetic.
Could be poetic. I mean, shame also apparently in the system was Shechina. We'll see that in a second. Let's just move to it. L'shem u'l'tiferet v'litila. So again, with Shamor v'Zachor, Shane was bothered by that ordering. But if you know the pasuk that this is quoting, you're also going to be bothered by the ordering. This is quoting from Devarim Kafvav, which you can look up in Tanakh. We'll look at a few pasukim here. Ulutitcha elyon al kol agoyim asher asa l'tihila u'l'shem v'l'tifaret. Right? So it should have been tihila, shame, and tiferet. So why was it reversed? Okay, so now we have to go into sphera land. So, let's just do the obvious one. Where's the obvious sphera that you have in the list? Tiferet, right? So what's going to unite with tiferet? Shechina, right? So shame is going to unite with Tiferet, shame plus Tiferet, is going up to Tehillah, i.e. Bina. Right? Another feminine. So instead of having Litehillah u'lishem v'litiferet, which would screw up the ordering, you have l'shem, and now you're playing out why. So another reason why shame shows up first is because you want to have some malchut aspect first in the beginning of all of them. L'shem united to Tiferet gets you to Tehillah. So at the end of the day, what you have in this verse is four, or at least four different ways of unifying. Right? What's the action of l'chadodi? It's unifying. That's what you're doing. That's what the Kabbalist is doing as a way of getting forward here. Okay, should we move a little bit forward? Likrat Shabbat l'chuvan elcha. We're not going to do everything on the list here, but just look at a few other things. Likrat Shabbat. Now again, here's the issue where you always have some doubling going on, where space, time, human and divine are often collapsed into, or four different lenses to view the same thing. So if the space version is, what's the time version that we have in the poem? Shabbat, right? Likrat Shabbat. What's the other metaphor that runs through the poem? If one major theme is Shabbat, what's the other metaphor? Yerushalayim. So Shabbat and Yerushalayim are linked, right? Where Shabbat is the theme of, I would argue, verses 1, 2, and probably 9. 9 is a little bit unclear, but let's say, at least from the Gemara, they were saying Boikala and Erev Shabbat. So 1, 2, and 9 are Shabbat, which leaves you the middle 6 as Yerushalayim, right? So what is, put it together, Shabbat is, you know, 3 of the verses, but sums up to 1 day of the week, whereas the other 6 reflect the other 6 days of the week, right? So you have Yerushalayim equaling Shabbat, and then you have the human and divine, right? So what am I going out to greet? Who am I going out to greet? I'm going out to greet Shabbat. Who else am I going out to greet? What's the human aspect?
Bride.
The bride, right? So Shabbat equals Yerushalayim equals the bride. And what's the divine version of the bride? Shechina, right? The heavenly bride, as it were. So all those four things are interchangeable in the poem. Shabbat, Yerushalayim, Shechina, and Kala are all the things that are being unified, right? So Likrat Shabbat, when I go to Likrat Shabbat, it could be I'm hearing in my head Likrat Kala from the refrain, where Shabbat and Kala are equated. And now you can also go out and think about this in the other aspects. That is to say, I'm going to greet Yerushalayim, I'm going to greet Malchut. All those things are wrapped up in the word of whatever I'm greeting. Let's just play out the Malchut one for a second. Sof ma'aseh b'machshava techila. This is a pretty wild one. Where apparently, what's the meaning of sof ma'aseh b'machshava techila? What does it seem to be referring to?
Shabbat.
Shabbat. Why is it sof ma'aseh b'machshava techila?
The seventh day of creation, the last thing created, but it was conceived of. You can't have 7 days of creation without thinking from the beginning.
Maybe. Good. Okay. Great. So Shabbat came up first in thought, last in deed. But now let's play it out with Malchut. Again, you can run this through on any one of those planes. But let's just play it out with Malchut. Sof ma'aseh b'machshava techila, meaning that the end, that is the sof, that is the bottom of the Sefirah tree, actually rises to the very top. In other words, there is some possibility where everything gets completely flipped around. Where instead of Keter being on top, Malchut is on top. Everything gets totally reversed, right? Because of this idea that ultimately there is no hierarchy when everything's unified, so you could even have the lowest thing become the highest thing, right? And so Malchut, now Malchut is the thing that's running through the poem instead of Keter, right? So you have this sort of inversion of the order. You think you understand the order, and then all of a sudden it gets flipped on its head, right? Because that's how you operate when everything is all one. Yeah. Uh-huh, okay, so play it out.
That reinforces what you're saying, right? That is Sof Masa Machshavat Shechina. We have, again, we have mirroring. Shechina is also called Machshavat Katanta, like the small thought, the lower thought, and it senses the mirror of the top, which is the supernal thought.
Uh-huh. They flip, right. So already by the end of the Shabbat verses, you've got the flipping going on. That's nice about Machshava. Okay, so now let's move to just a couple other notes here, which I think are amazing. Okay, let's talk about in the next verse. V'hu yachamol alayichem la. Mitash melech ir melucha, kumitzi mitoch hafecha. Rav lach shevet. Now we move from Shabbat to shevet. Right? You're talking about Shabbat, but you're also talking about sitting. Right? It's the same word, obviously. B'emek habacha. These guys spent a lot of time on that. V'hu yachamol alayichem la. So let's just spend a little moment on that. This quote comes from Yirmiyahu, Tedvav. And in Yirmiyahu Tedvav, it says, Mi yachamol alayich Yerushalayim? Who will have mercy upon you, Yerushalayim? In a sort of rhetorical way, right? And here, instead of me, instead of a question, we have an answer. So what is going to have mercy on Yerushalayim? Who? What is who? You have to guess. Break it down for me. Sfirot, right? Sfirot. Where you have hey, again, is the bottom, malchut, right? Like in the last hey of Yud Hey Vav Hey. And then you have Vav, which is Tiferet, right? Here we're not doing all six Sfirot, but the Vav itself is sort of like the middle line, right? Like the shape of the Vav. Okay, so you got the Hey at the bottom, the Vav is Tiferet, and the Aleph, which is the ultimate number one, the beginning, Keter, right? So you have Vehu, Hu Yachamol Alayichem La. Instead of a sort of depressing, Mi Yachamol Alayich Yerushalayim, who could possibly have mercy on you? Here on Shabbat in the unification theme, who is going to do it? That is to say, the unified Godhead, right? God, the Sfirot, are going to have the Chemla on Alayich here being Yerushalayim. Okay, and you know it's Yerushalayim if you know the verse, but you can also sort of figure it out from context clues, which many of you did. Hey is Malchut, Vav Tiferet, and Aleph being Keter. Relates to the Pasuk Ki Yad Al Kesia, right? Yad Al Kesia, which is missing certain letters, right? It should say, instead of Kesia, it should say, Kisei, I'm not going to write it. No. Kisei Hashem. So what's it missing? It's missing an Aleph, a Vav, and a Hey. Who? Right? So once you've got the who, you've filled up God's chair. The Pasuk has been actually spelled out. God is not diminished anymore. God is in full. Okay. Let's go to the middle of the poem. Hit Ori. Hit Ori, Hit Ori. Now here, if you notice already some of the doubling, this one goes double crazy, right? Hit-ori, hit-ori, uri-uri. Now, we have the doubling here, which obviously draws your eye in. And you have the play on words here. What is the main word or sound in this verse? Or, right? Now, what do you know about aleph, or, and ayin, or? Yeah, what's the relationship between light and skin? First of all, let's do the letters. What is ayin in gematria? 70, right? Shivim panim la Torah, right? That which was refracted 70 nations, sort of like the stand-in for the most multitudinous number that you could think of, right? The sort of core many turns into the aleph. But there's also
there's also 70 nations.
Correct, right, 70 nations in Israel. And you have, the code note or that God dressed Adam and Eve with in Breshit, with an ayin, right? But there's a Gemara that says in Rabbi Meir's Torah, in his Sefer Torah, Meir was a scribe, in Rabbi Meir's Sefer Torah, it didn't say or God dressed them up with skin, but it said, or with an aleph, God dressed them up with light. So you have a transition that happens when you move from 70, refracted, separate, ununified, to or, one, unified, light, right? You're moving from sort of gashmiut, skin, right, to a sort of supernal light. So you move from hit ori, uri, uri, and what happens? Where's the light? Kiva orech kumi ori. Right? So you move from the or with an ayin, or with the aleph, back to the or with the ayin. Now what's amazing about the poem is, you're smack in the middle of the poem. You're right, if you just count the number of words, Kiva Orech Kumi Ori is the exact middle of the poem. And what's the middle of that quote of a pasuk, or a version of a quote of a pasuk? Orech. Okay, so what I want to argue, and again, this is a style of biblical or of ancient writing where the climax of something is not the end. We sort of think of like the Hollywood version of a climax as the last 5 minutes of the movie, or, you know, the last 5 minutes, and then there's five more minutes of everybody happily ever after. So, but in ancient system of writing, the middle was the climax. Everything's leading towards the middle. This is like, for instance, we're heading towards Vayikra. Vayikra is the key. And what's in the middle of Vayikra? Right? The Kedoshim, right? So you have, you know, that's the essence, right? You could do this, you could play this out with Mishnah, actually. It's pretty amazing. Where instead of, when you're looking for the core of, like, a parak of Mishnah, start from the middle and work out. It's a problem because of the editing stuff that went on. But let's say here it's very clear, it's a constructed poem. Kiva Orech Kumi Ori is in the middle. Now, what's interesting is, how does it normally work with the Kabbalists? How do I affect change in the world if I'm a Kabbalist? What do I do? What's that? Prayer study. What about in this poem? How do I affect change? Right. With your wife. Okay, so yeah. Right? You do something on the ground, the theurgy, right? I do something here which moves the heavens up there. Right? I unite with my wife, and that allows Tiferet and Malchut to unite and go up to Bina. But here, interestingly enough, who's making the first move in the center of the poem here? It's not Kumi Ori Kiva Orech, which is in fact a quote from Isaiah. Kumi Ori Kiva Orech Uchvod Adonai Alayach Zarach, right, is what the quote is. But it's inverted. Kiva Orech Kumi Ori. When your light comes, then my light stands up, as it were. Right? So what you have is sort of this reverse of what the normal... In other words, the impetus is on whom to make the change to lead to redemption. Now it's not about you, right? Even though you do have some you know, role like Lichadodi, unless it's God talking to Knesset Israel. Right? But here it's God makes the first move. In other words, the challenge of the poem is to say, in the redeemed world, I'm waiting for you. Kiva Orech Kumi Ori, right? You make the first move, then I can sort of join in. So you have these, you know, hit ori, uri, uri. I mean, it's not clear who's talking to who and which sphira might be talking to which, but you clearly have this inversion of the pasuk from Yeshayahu, where you are challenging God to make the first move, as opposed to the normal Kabbalistic move of, if we all celebrate two Shabbatot in a row, if we all do this, if we have the right Kavanah and we do X, then it moves the heavens. No, here on Shabbat, the heavens move first. Yeah.
It seems like also because there is someone speaking and declaring and saying, wait, that there is still a human first initiation.
Right, well, it depends who is doing the speaking. In other words, am I speaking, who's speaking to who? Right? You could certainly have an interpretation where it's the human who's speaking. It's God who's speaking and saying, you know, wake up. But it could be the other way around, right? You could have a possibility of you trying to arouse, you know, and then maybe you're saying, by that speaking, you're doing the act. Is that what it is?
Yeah, and I guess it's also reading it, switching around who's doing what.
Right. Okay. So you could potentially read it that way as well. Right. Right.
As opposed to because you are light.
Right. Because your light comes, my light stands. I mean, you can also read it that way also. I think it sort of gets the same idea across. Right. It's harder to make sense of it that way, but Well, I think you could read it either way. In other words, hitori. Well, first of all, it's probably one sphira talking to another, but let's just forget on that for a second. Let's say it would be me speaking to Hashem. Hitori, hitori, why? Kiva orech kumi ori. Right? You could read it the other way as well. Hashem speaking to Yerushalayim. Again, these sort of interchangeable, you know, modes here. Okay, it's... It's late, so I just want to end with one last thing, which is the verse 8, Yaminu Smol Tifrotzi, V'yat Adonai Ta'aritzi, Al Yad Ish Ben Partzi. Just do this very quickly. Yaminu Smol Tifrotzi. So again, here, you look at through the lens of space, time, Hashem, and human and divine. Let's just do space and time. Yaminu Smol Tifrotzi. Let's do time. What needs to break out right and left? What's the main time image here?
Shabbat.
So what does it mean for Shabbat to break out right and left? When is Shabbat kind of, where does Shabbat extend to? Yeah, what if you're going to go even further? How late can I make Havdalah? Right? You can go that far, right? So you could extend it either way. What does it mean? Yaminu small, that means if Shabbat is actually the center of the week as opposed to the end of the week, right? The center being the most critical. Shabbat extends to the right and to the left. That is to say, on either end of the weekly calendar, Shabbat now has broken out entirely. Now you can do it in terms of space, Yerushalayim, right? Yerushalayim exceeding its borders, going beyond the local borders of the city here, right? Everything is breaking out right and left. You also have this sort of, you know, little bit of a shtup here where you got the what is the right and left of Shabbat in terms of just days. Yeah, and whose days are those? Right, so you can also break out into the sort of like, we're taking over other religions, there's one, there's only one. Okay? And then, Al Yad Ish Ben Partzi, who's Ben Partzi? Who's Peretz? Shadr and son of Yudah Tamar, and what? Yeah, by how many generations? Take a wild guess. Ted, right? So you have the Sfira, again, the Sfira reference here, where Al-Yad ben Parsi, meaning the one who is the sort of ancestor of 10 generations, that is to say the tenfold, you know, image of the Sfirot, that is how we're going to make this happen. When you unite that tenfold, you know, picture, as it were, then things start breaking out right and left. Okay, we don't have time to do the other poem, but if you're interested in the other poem, it's on the back here. You see other versions of L'cha Dodi. There you go.